Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm the host of PWT Talks NXT. Today we're going to talk NXT for June 15th, 2021. Sorry for the short delay, but Nate forgot some of his gear in the wrong room, something that I have frankly never done. We're here. We're going to talk this show coming out of a takeover that was just two nights ago. Felt like we just talked together, guys, and I guess we did. There was a holdover match from TakeOver. It seems like it could have been on TakeOver because it got just as much build, if not more so, than most of the TakeOver matches. Thatcher and Ciampa versus Grizzled Young Veterans. That was the main event. We are going to talk main event, and then we are going to go to the phone lines. So tornado tag match. The only rule is no real rules. No countouts. They told us no countouts. They didn't tell us no disqualifications, but they didn't rope break for any tap outs. So I guess no disqualifications, because if you're not going to be disqualified for holding on to it, I don't know. The rules are fluid, folks, and they don't matter. Tornado matches, tough to recap. But I think these guys made some chicken salad here. I thought that this was fine given the constraints of – I just don't think the tornado tag thing works all that well for heels to get heat. But whatever. I thought that this did very well within the confines of that. I just kind of wonder where it's going. Also, we had some very strange production moments too in the waning moments of this show where they started a segment and then just crossed over to another segment. No warning. Oh, the first one was segment to segment. The second one, Ciampa's cutting a post-match promo, and they go away from the promo, which I wanted to hear, because I don't think he had much to say, but he had something. But maybe they had to make hay and stop. So, whatever. We'll maybe talk about that, you guys, if you feel like it. But let's just start with the main event. 17 minutes and 9 seconds. Thatcher and Ciampa win. Are they the number one contenders? De facto number one contenders or not? I guess you guys will have to tell me. We got a tap out from James Drake to both other guys. Tom Staupe, who are you and what did you think of the main event?
I am at Tom Staupe on Twitter, and the SUV didn't blow up. I thought the SUV was going to blow up. I never believed that GYV had a chance to win this, because all of the focus, even immediately before the match with that little popcorn chomping thing backstage, all of the focus has been on Ciampa and Thatcher wanting these belts. And they've felt like the number one contenders even before the ceremonial crowning. Like you said, we didn't get that confirmation, but this, you know, just feels like a step in that direction. So that definitely hurt things, especially in such an action-packed match where there was no real other reason to feel for a certain outcome. I was mostly just thinking like, all right, this is Tommaso Ciampa doing the Daniel Bryan thing of saying like, if I can't re-smash my neck to bits, then I don't want to wrestle at all. He said it was his takeover. So, all right. I don't know. He kind of goes all out with every single match these days, which on one hand, he's been doing a very good job with Thatcher. So bravo. On the other hand, it's like, you know what, man, I wouldn't mind if you cooled it a bit for yourself and for your family. You know, it's okay. You've earned it, man. But all right, whatever. I guess it was fine in the main event slot given everything else tonight. Sure.
Yeah, like I understand him as an artist wanting to give his all, not knowing how much more of this there is. But yeah, he just seems like the kind of guy you can't tell to slow down. I got some of those in my family, and there's nothing that can be done. As far as I can tell, Nate Lindberg, who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter, and I do the hits and misses for NXT, which I will have posted up on the pwtorch.com for you guys in the morning. So I really enjoyed the main event, to be honest with you. It's not often we see a tornado tag, and I feel like that stipulation for both of these teams was a perfect stipulation for them. These guys, they're brawlers, submission specialists. I feel like the tornado tag stip, where you've got all four guys in the ring at the same time, and it's still technically, it's not a no DQ match. You know, you still have rules, things you've got to follow. Just, you don't have to follow the tag rules. I like that. And it's something I don't want to see super often in the tag division, but for this particular feud, I think it was a perfect stipulation for this match. I enjoyed it. It was something we don't really see very often. It was a little bit chaotic and frenetic at times, but overall I dug it. These are two of my favorite teams, four of my favorite guys in the NXT, really. Really kind of nice to watch and see that especially see them in a main event. I'm kind of taking this as like them being de facto number one contenders as well. I'm interested to see if that is the case. I'm interested to see how they fare against MSK, because of the whole face heel dynamic. Tommaso Ciampa and Thatcher are they're not necessarily heels, although they could easily take those characters in a line heel. So I'm sure if they did go up against MSK, that would probably be the way they'd go. I don't know. It's kind of like a weird flip flop, but going back and forth, from heel to face, but whatever. I guess I could live with it. Overall, I thought this was a really cool match. I really actually, I do want to say I really enjoyed the finish to this. It was just cool to see, both of them put on submissions. I think it was an ankle lock and an arm bar, if I'm not mistaken, to get the win. It just a really cool cap on a brutal and energetic match.
Do you want to call us, folks? What do you have to lose? The number is 515-605-9345. We got a bunch of callers tonight, so we're going to make hay and get to those calls. We'll keep it to one thought tonight just because, we got a bunch of you, and let me go first to 440. I believe this is Steve in Cleveland. Steve, if you're on and if you can hear me, go ahead and say hey.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you doing, Steve? Decent show, I thought.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I'd give it about if we're going to give it a number rating, about 7.5 out of 10. Personally, I got to be frank with you. I like seeing Ciampa as a singles competitor. Now, the fact that, as you've already mentioned, who knows what his physical limitations really are and future at this point, I think that Thatcher has the personality of a jack-o'-lantern, so I just never get invested in pretty much anything he does. And personally, I think you'd be better served to turn MSK heel because they come across as this 20-something snarky duo anyway, and I didn't know what your thoughts might be on that, at least in the short term.
All right, Steve, thank you for that. I think we're going to probably hear a lot of people talking about maybe just turning MSK, if for no other reason than the fact that they kind of get a heel reaction anyway when they're out there. And I think some of it is just when you push somebody that hard, that fast, as baby faces and all the way to the championships, there is some pushback, like just 100%. A lot of gatekeeping by the wrestling community, particularly in Orlando at these shows. But I think they got a point that these guys do kind of just come off as snarky dudes who may or may not care about really anything. So I think you could do these teams against each other. I don't know where that leads. Certainly, I don't think any of us are going to argue that Ciampa's not one of the absolute great singles wrestlers of the generation. And I would be interested to know how much of this is him moving into this as he goes off into the sunset after a while, or if they're just trying to spell him to keep him healthy and wait for that next big singles run. And maybe it's play it by ear until they know how healthy he's going to be. And if that could be the reason he goes out there and does this every night, so he can say, I'm not done having singles runs. So I'm going to go this hard and I'm going to be fine. And you might as well push me as a single because you've got me. But yes, if for no other reason, then it will feel fresh again, just because he was on the top for so long. I don't mind him stepping away for 6 months to a year and then being essentially a fresh face at the top of the singles pile again. Nate?
I'd be totally okay with that as well. I mean, Thatcher and Ciampa, he's somebody like, you know, we've said a bunch of times at this point, is like, I feel like he's well, at least he reached that like S level tier where he didn't need a title. He didn't need anything super important because whatever story he was involved in was the story. And that was like the thing that, you know, it was the biggest thing on the show. And clearly that's not the case anymore. But I feel like he could easily get there again. Once it's time for him to be a singles competitor, once more, I'm kind of thinking that this tag team pairing with Thatcher is probably something along the lines of what you're talking about, is you know, a way to either, you know, protect him for now and keep him so he's still on TV and still relevant and still in our minds, in the ring, you know, actually doing work, without being in those single spots. And it's kind of a way to, at least not necessarily tonight in this match, because, you know, he spent the entire match in the ring, but at least in a normal tag team match, you get time out of the ring, you tag out and you get time of rest. So obviously, you know, probably a little bit less opportunity for something to go wrong. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think this is a, you know, it's a good spot for him. I'm really looking forward to seeing him get back to a singles title or a singles career though. Tommaso Ciampa is one of my favorites. He has been since 2016. I saw him in person, up here in New England, and just phenomenal. So, as far as Thatcher goes, you know, I know you said caller said that he's not super involved. He doesn't really like Timothy Thatcher. It kind of finds him a little bit bland and boring. And I think he's certainly not everybody's cup of tea. He's definitely not everybody's cup of tea. I think just about every wrestling fan that I know in real life feels the same way about Thatcher, with maybe the exception of one. And not that I know many wrestling fans in real life, let's be honest, but, still the few that I know, that they kind of feel the same. I love Thatcher. I think, he brings that like old school heel, vibe with him. And I really dig that. It's kind of just this, it's a nice tie from, like an older generation of wrestling mixed with a modern style of wrestling. So I appreciate it. And I think him and Thatcher, or him and Ciampa rather, they make a pretty good team together simply because of their style. So, I'm on board with what's going on right now anyway.
Yeah. I like Thatcher a lot too. But that said, I don't know that I'd move him really any higher than they have him.
No.
Tom.
I think Thatcher might take the jack-o'-lantern comment as a compliment. As for the MSK thing, I'm not sure the situation is so dire that they should leap right to pulling the heel turn trigger. I feel like just losing the titles and being able to establish themselves not as champions may help. And yeah, that it would also take turning down the dial a little bit on the obnoxiousness, for example, what we saw in that segment with Ember and Shotzi, or maybe it was with Raquel and Dakota on that one weird week where they were just like super baby faces all of a sudden, and then right back to being heels the following week, that was when they were wrestling Shayna and Nia, whatever. The weird stuff NXT is doing these days. That's the level of obnoxiousness that is not translating, I don't think. It's not the same, you know, that 70s show stuff they were doing on Impact. Yeah, I feel like on one hand, I feel like they kind of have to lose the belts to Ciampa and Thatcher because there's almost no world where them going over Ciampa and Thatcher doesn't turn the crowd on them that much more. But from where I'm sitting, I also don't sense that the adverse crowd reaction is so very vitriolic that you need to worry about that to such a high level to veer course, assuming that the course hasn't always been like, okay, we're eventually going to put the belts on Ciampa and Thatcher as it felt like could have been possible at the Dusty Classic. Maybe the best case scenario is putting MSK over strong and giving them the moment where Ciampa and Thatcher raise their arms for the crowd and for the camera. That might be best case for them.
All right. Well, let us go to another call and keep this thing moving. This is 615. You know, I've got a lot of notes down about who calls and from where, but it's all on separate pages, which is pretty worthless. I need spreadsheet, gang. 615, if you can hear me, go ahead.
Well, Kelly, Tom, and Nate, first of all, can you hear me? Because the last time I got to call in, it was a little staticky and weird and crazy. So can you guys hear me okay?
You sound great.
Awesome. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Kelly, I'm disappointed in you, but you can recover the next time, I promise. I'll forgive you this time, and the next time I don't know what I'll have to do. I'm not really sure, but thank you guys.
I'll write it down.
Thank you guys for taking my call as always. I'll just say really quick. It was cool seeing Samoa Joe back on NXT TV. It was really cool. I was excited for that, and I'm curious to see where they go, you know, with him in this role, but. My main question I had for you guys tonight was, it was a very good show, I thought. Going back to the infamous LA Knight Million Dollar Champion coronation, there's two questions in one. The first question relating to that segment was it just too predictable? Because the whole time he's talking, you just know he's going to attack Ted. You just know he's going to. But at the same time, do you think I thought it was really good because it got, ultimately, Cameron is a babyface, and that's what I think he needs to be right now, and I think it's a good role for him. The crowd loves him. I think we all enjoy him immensely, and I think it's going to be a good to keep the feud going between them, and they're in the right roles. So what did you think of the segment overall, and did it just, even though it might have been too predictable, did it get ultimately where it needed to go? And thank you guys, Tom, Nate, you guys are the best too. Thank you for taking my call, as always.
Well, thank you. And I make no promises, but I will try to make a list and make sure that I know who people are. Anyway, I feel the same as you, like all around, because it was very predictable. He did have to do this. Knight did have to do this. To maintain, especially after he gave essentially a babyface promo, what would have been considered a babyface promo if he did not turn at the end. I think he got to a point where he gushed so much, I almost put it out of his head, even though really it was more proof that he was going to have to do what he had to do. I'd almost just argue that the attack wasn't motivated enough just because it was kind of strangely out of nowhere. Like, why does he suddenly feel the need to leave Ted DiBiase behind other than we need to treat him as a total heel? And by the way, continued, massive kudos to this man for continuing to get the correct heel response in front of the toughest crowd in the nation, one of the toughest crowds in the nation, to just maintain an actual heel reaction. I mean, the vocal males are the vocal males, but what are you going to do? But yeah, I still thought, despite that, this was a wonderful segment that got this where it had to go, continues to be one of the better parts of the show, despite them at the beginning not even having Ted DiBiase, like nobody had even contacted Ted DiBiase when they started referencing him on the show. And yes, Cameron Grimes, just in case anybody hadn't caught on, 100% completes his heel turn tonight and the crowd pretty nuts for him, and you're going to hear a lot of me saying I was there first, because I was. Tom, on the $1 million coronation.
Glad to hear Sean's voice back on the show. I think I forget whether I've mentioned this before, but I've definitely noticed that they consistently put this storyline at the top of the hour. So clearly they feel, I mean, they've shown over and over again that they feel highly about it. One of the cues that they feel highly about it, it leads me to a little bit of cleanup from Sunday night, where I echoed what was said on the pre-show and what was said on commentary later, that Stone Cold, invoking the name of Stone Cold in association now with LA Knight, tip off the, how strongly they feel about him, Stone Cold was the last $1 million champion. That's what they said. They want us to forget about DiBiase Jr. I did forget about DiBiase Jr., but remembered it after we recorded. So a little bit of cleanup there. Yep, he was actually the last one. But, yeah, speaking of
another – I didn't get to say this on the last show, but another thing they did that was really clever in a backhand way was say L.A. Knight will be only the third man not named Ted DiBiase to
that
were named Ted DiBiase.
Yes, wow. I remember them saying that, and I still didn't – yeah, wow. So speaking of best-case scenarios, it is a low bar to say that this is one of the better segments that this storyline has had, but it was because I don't know if I expected it. I agree with Sean that as soon as L.A. Knight started talking, which, I mean, as you suggested, it was very successful. It was awkwardly nervous for him, and it almost felt like he was thrown off by the crowd chanting for Cameron Grimes, which just feels totally out of character for what he's shown us thus far. But it was very clear from the beginning with the phrasing he was using and his tone that this was leading to an attack on Ted. But I've been saying that even though the belt suits LA Knight's heel role better, he does not need DiBiase with him. He has the talent that he doesn't need that that association. And Grimes is fine too, but LA Knight in particular really doesn't need it. So what a great development that not only does he kick DiBiase to the curb, but he still gets the prop to cart around and for Grimes to chase. So yet again, we're at another point, and we could have argued this at just about any point, that DiBiase doesn't even really have to keep coming back. But if he does, that's fine. I thought that his rejection of Grimes after Knight was inserted into the story was heelish enough to get by on being accepted as a heel for the time being. But fact is, he's a beloved legend, so this suits him with Grimes coming to his aid. I just think this was a very good development for a story that has made its participants look really, really pathetic, but still somehow seems to be heading in the right direction.
Nathaniel Allen Lindberg.
You know, I think it might be because I just rewatched WrestleMania X8 with Frank Pettiani for now and then, where I had to rewatch Edge versus Booker T for a Japanese shampoo commercial. That made them look incredibly pathetic. Maybe that's why I don't feel like they're quite as pathetic here. They're still pathetic. That don't get me wrong, but I've kind of liked the whole angle, honestly, because it's just kind of seemed like they're feuding over a, for lack of a better term, they're feuding over a Rolex. You know, they're just feuding over a piece that they can show off. It's not like it's a real title or anything like that. And I had a feeling that this was going to come into the $1 million championship anyway, weeks ago. So it's kind of, I had a feeling this was what they were either building towards, or maybe, you know, from what it sounds like, maybe they just kind of pieced this all together as the weeks went on. And I just got lucky in what I was saying, who knows. But, I think this is a great spot for LA Knight. I think the, yes, it was super predictable what happened, especially when he started going into that super baby face, you know, how much you mean to me, and I grew up with you, my father, this, that, the other thing. Yeah, absolutely super predictable that it was going to happen. But when it happened, I wouldn't say it invoked like a festival of friendship level, like, oh, no, in me. But it was, I still had a little bit of like, oh, man, come on. Just a little bit. And I don't get invested like that much in wrestling lately. So, you know, just to get that kind of like, I don't know if it's maybe like a nostalgia hook, like I didn't want to see a $1 million man get hit, or maybe the fact that he's just old and I didn't want to see him take a bump and get hurt. I don't know. But like, he attacked him. I knew it was coming, but it's still like, ah, oh, man, that, you know, whatever. But like Kelly said, actually, you know what, to Kelly's point, he pulled the same reaction out of the, you know, the NXT crowd, you know, there at CWC. So, you know, maybe he is doing, he's doing the right thing to get that right reaction. Absolutely. But I think this is a great spot for him, you know, with that around his waist, it's a heat magnet. I'm really curious to see how this develops for LA Knight, well, for both of them, but I'm really curious to see how this develops for LA Knight now that he has the $1 million championship. He's already, you know, he's already punched Ted DiBiase in the face. So what other despicable things is he going to do? Is he going to go like Batista dragging Ric Flair around, you know, to levels to try and get at Cameron Grimes or what? But I'm curious to see, you know, curious to see where it goes. And I'm really interested to see if they actually, well, I think they will. I think this is eventually going to lead into Cameron Grimes, you know, taking that title away from him in some other $1 million championship match. I'm personally on board with it. This is like one of my favorite things every week.
Yeah. I, the big question is how soon do they move to that next one? We got a few weeks to go before Great American Bash. They got a chance to build Great American Bash better than they built Takeover in Your House, which is a low bar, but they got a chance to actually get more of it done earlier. We already have our assumed main event for that, but we will get to that a little bit later. We have got one caller from Skype. I could make some guesses, but I won't. I will let this Skype caller say who they are and where they're calling from.
Hidden from Canada. How you guys doing?
Hey, Mr. Dave, we're doing pretty well here. How are you?
Doing all right. I wanted to talk to you guys about Samoa Joe, and since we're only doing one comment, I'll try and distill this all into one comment. From a meta standpoint, I guess this is the best that Samoa Joe can do. I was a fan of Sheriff Austin back in 2003, 2004. I guess that's when I started watching wrestling. So, and I still watch back, and I kind of have a fondness for it. So I like it, but I don't want to like it, you know, because in a kayfabe sense, Samoa Joe being able to physically pick on these top level talents, this guy is a 40-plus-year-old, at least I think that's his age, wrestler who retired. Let me just quickly look up his age. But he's been forced to retire due to injury. He's 42. And he's able to manhandle, essentially, someone like Adam Cole, which, I don't know, I don't think that's a very good look. It sort of makes the rest of the roster feel a little, like, subservient, a little too subservient. Like they're kind of less than this guy who managed to make his way to the main roster and achieve main event status there, and these guys really aren't worth it. From that standpoint, I don't really like his role. Also, just a very small note regarding that brawl with Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. I noticed that toward the end of that brawl, if you could see in the background in the camera, Kyle was in the background basically deliberately walking behind a security guard. This is after Samoa Joe grabbed Adam Cole and pulled him away. Kyle was like, okay, I don't know what to do. There's no security on me. As a babyface, I should be going after Adam Cole, but I'm just going to walk behind and let and direct the security guard to put his arm over me and restrain me. It was so deliberate. It was such a bad production oversight. I don't know if anyone noticed that. But, yeah, your guys' thoughts on Samoa Joe, as well as whether his role is actually going to be productive.
I didn't see that moment. There's a lot going on, and I'm typing at the moment, but I will see if these guys did. My favorite odd moment like that of late was during the MSK match that I didn't get to talk much about during – well, we talked about – not that I wanted to talk a lot about it, the six-man where there was – was it during that? Yeah, Bronson Reed was putting two heels on his back. Two legatos.
Yeah, Joaquin Wild just
and
Joaquin right on top.
Crawled on his back. Ooh, mama, that was no good. And Joaquin is so good. So what the hell? That's something the camera's got to not catch. But what are you going to do? So, okay. I liked seeing Joe do what he was doing also, but I will like it more in retrospect if there isn't much of him having to do it. I don't mind him laying down the law and establishing that he can one time early on, but it's crazy that Adam Cole, their potential centerpiece, was the first one to be completely laid out by him, just a coquina clutch out of nowhere, and he's done. He's down. So it was – that's a – that's – you know, you could – really be putting your guy behind the eight ball with a spot like that. But we've seen when I started watching wrestling in 1990, it wasn't like that at all. You would not see those authority figures in that position at all. Well, I mean, you're on screen authority figures were guys like Jack Tunney. So obviously you wouldn't see that, but we've just gotten to a point where we're so fond of tradition that basically every legacy night, the legacy guys beat up the guys currently wrestling on the product. And it just seems like the absolute opposite of what you want to do. I will also, we might as well just talk about that segment. We open with William Regal talking about leaving, giving a very impassioned, seemingly real speech about leaving. Like shedding tears, and I'm thinking this is it. This is really it. And maybe this is it in some way, or maybe he just got emotional about like all he has gotten to do with this brand. But it sure seems like he's not going anywhere. That it's going to continue this particular two-man power dynamic, at least in the short term. And maybe from there they'll transition to Samoa Joe. But Karrion Kross gets involved here. He does a lot of tweenering, but he went full-on heel, dressing down William Regal before Samoa Joe showed up and sent him off. Not the first time that Kross has just been in a segment where somebody was sent off in a way that did not help them any, because he did that with Escobar as well. But I thought that bringing Kross into that segment actually, for me, sowed some doubt, because we all thought that it was probably Samoa Joe. That was the very popular pick, that he was going to be in this spot, but I thought that it added something just having Kross there. Also gave Kross something to do on a show where otherwise he had no particular business. So I guess, what are your thoughts on that, Nate?
I guess in terms of like Samoa Joe coming back, well, you know, kind of starting there, I'm super pumped to actually see him in this spot. So I guess kind of talking a little bit about like his involvement, you know, with some of the talent, you know, and kind of being super strong, taking him out, you know, one coquina clutch and all that. I hear where you guys are coming from, and I don't want to see that every week. I don't want to see him be super, super dominant every week, but I think he needed that tonight. Obviously this is the first night that he's being this enforcer. So I don't think he could have come off looking weak if they want him to be an enforcer. So I think he needed to take somebody out that was like, you know, take Adam Cole out, you know, very swiftly like that, to kind of keep that, I guess, mystique or whatever you want to call it. You know, keep that, you know, on him, and make him look a lot stronger for this particular role. I don't want to see that every single week, though, because, yeah, I agree. I think that could certainly start defining down some top guys if he's going to be, you know, just taking people out. That said, there's still that in the back of everybody's head, can he still wrestle? Will he still wrestle? If he got involved in all this stuff tonight, that tells me he's cleared. They wouldn't let him get involved in things like that if he's not cleared. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't know. I don't think so. You know, I mean, look at Christian. You know, when Christian started to get involved in that, in the Randy Orton storyline, I mean, I don't think they would have done that if he wasn't cleared. And he was probably cleared because he came back at the Rumble. You know, don't know that for sure back then, but just kind of going off of, you know, going off of at least common sense anyway. So, yeah, there's kind of that. Like, even though they're saying right now that he's not going to be able to be a competitor, that's one thing that tells me even more. He's going to be competing at some point. Against who, I don't know. I don't know if that means he's going to break away from Regal and then, you know, try to fight for title, or if he's going to end up needing to fight on Regal's behalf, or something like that. But I kind of think that that's where this is going. I don't know exactly like who yet, but I have a feeling it's going to be leading to a Samoa Joe in the ring, especially where they put such a heavy focus on him not being able to compete. And I don't think that there's really any, I don't think he's retired. I don't think there's any reason that he can't, other than, you know, I know he's dealing with some concussion issues and things like that. But if he was going to start wrestling in other promotions, I don't know. You know, obviously we'll see, but, that's kind of where I'm thinking this goes. What was it? Karrion Kross coming out and interrupting William Regal. I thought that was pretty much like, I liked it because it was basically once William Regal got cut off, I had a feeling that he wasn't going to be leaving. I don't know why, but like when he was cutting that original promo, when he was like first got out there and he starts cutting that promo, you know, heartfelt, like you said, tears in his eyes and everything. Like, I really did. I thought he was going to be going. When Karrion Kross came out, as soon as the music hit, I'm like, all right, that something's going on. He's not going away. But Karrion Kross, I kind of like what he did here tonight. This is, I think, more the direction that I'd like to see out of him. Cause like you said, you know, he's kind of been, you know, dancing around tweener. You know, he's been doing some stuff on social media. Like, he did some stuff with Ever-Rise like a couple weeks ago that was just so dumb. And not something you really want to see your, you know, super badass champion doing. It was really stupid. If you haven't seen it, don't even bother taking the time to look it up, because it really wasn't worth it. I made these guys watch it, if they did, but, you know, really not even worth the time.
I TikTok to promote on the Takeover pre-show. They finally made that move.
Yep. That was like cringeworthy as all hell. But I can understand the marketing behind it too. I don't remember where I was going with that, which, you know, happens sometimes. So that's okay. Karrion Kross. And then I guess I'll wrap up with William Regal. I love William Regal. I'm so glad to see that he's not leaving. It was a little like, it was kind of heartbreaking. You know, we were talking about it a little bit on the post show the other night after TakeOver. He's been here forever. He even said it tonight. He's been there since, you know, NXT started, the inception of NXT. And, you know, it was a little heartbreaking to think of NXT without him. I don't know if he'll be gone anytime soon, you know, if this will transition into Samoa Joe's show or whatever. But I'm going to certainly enjoy William Regal while we got him.
Indeed. Tomorrow, when Tom and I record NXT 8 years back, it would have been a real bummer listening to his commentary, knowing that he had left the night before. Tom.
Real quick, I didn't catch the Kyle O'Reilly moment, but It unfortunately doesn't surprise me. As for Regal, of course, I agree with that sentiment, Kelly. And before he switched to teeing up the angle here, his promo was basically just a verbal highlight reel of his NXT tenure. But the difference is made in the fact that, as you said, Kelly, it felt real. It felt, I mean, and every word he was speaking was true. I mean, he said he was there since day one. And, you know, as we mentioned two nights ago, he was the one who announced on the 2010 Elimination Chamber pay-per-view that NXT was going to be a thing. He's the one who let us all know that it was happening. So he really was there from the very, very beginning in some capacity. I mean, things that NXT has been routinely doing well during this period that I've been more down on them than ever. It's building up the weekly TV main events throughout the same week's TV show with backstage video promos, like we saw tonight with GYV, for example. And it's the post-takeover resets. And it's easy to say that they're good because it's the beginning of stories that we haven't seen play out yet. But I thought this was another situation where I'm going to use the term best-case scenario, because not only do we get to keep Regal, but now there is a return to some capacity of, yes, it's through Samoa Joe, but some capacity of Regal being able to get involved while still towing that line of keeping Regal's GM role. You're not going to worry about him getting in the ring and getting too involved in storylines. So replacing him with Samoa Joe as the general manager who also wrestles is not something we are going to trespass. At least, you know, it doesn't seem that way as yet. When Regal was winding down his in-ring career on NXT, even in the pre-Full Sail days, he was not the general manager yet, but still a relatively authoritative figure, someone you looked up to, someone with a legacy who you didn't want to mess with. And as I mentioned on Sunday, I feel that for as different as they are, Regal and Joe have similar auras about them where just that glower that they share is like, you look at them and it's like, oh boy, I don't, even though he's wearing a suit, I don't want to mess with that dude. And so I feel like Joe is an excellent successor or, you know, in this case, partner who, you know, maybe there's something I don't know, but I feel like he's got a few matches left in him. So I wholly agree with Nate here in that while I feel like they'll want to be more careful with this moving forward, tonight was the night to capitalize on the excitement of having Samoa Joe back on the Black and Gold brand in this capacity and have him get involved here and there and tease several possible feuds like with Cross and with Dunn and with Cole. There's my gush about the at least potential for that. And as for the Karrion Kross thing, I always hesitate to open this heel face can of worms, but man, NXT, I was chatting with Kelly offline. I used the phrase shades of gray regarding how we've seen the characterizations recently. But even as I typed that, I knew that that's not actually what they're doing. Like I suggested with, or like I mentioned with Raquel and Dakota, when they had to go up against Shayna and Nia, what we're actually seeing is just like every other week, these characters are cast differently depending on who they're up against. So there's no consistency in how we are supposed to feel about them. Very, very recently, Karrion Kross was being presented as the intended babyface. And tonight he's like being more of a nasty heel than ever by going after Regal verbally like that. In that particular moment, which, you know, yeah, is that teed up Joe coming out very nicely because you want someone to come out and act on Regal's behalf. But, I mean, we're talking about a champion who in the segment where he ended up getting laid out by the way at the end of it, with the belt shot, he turned, I forget whether it was supposed to be even face or heel. He turned halfway through the segment And it's just like week to week, you don't know how to feel about this guy. You don't know how to feel about the way. You don't know how to feel about, you know, pick almost anybody on the card at this point. Not anybody, but there's so many where it's just like, it's bizarre what they're doing, because it isn't Shades of Grey characterization, which I, you know, if we saw it play out, I might be able to defend. This is just utterly bizarre the way people are cast week to week to week.
All right. I just switched away from my switchboard. I shouldn't have done that. I'm back. Okay. We are going to go to Darrell in Georgia. And after that, we still got one more call. And after that, we'll start running for the exits. Darrell, what did you see today?
How you guys doing today? And it was an okay show. Okay show. One thing I want to talk about, and it's one of two in one. I like the Trey Baxter versus Kushida match, even though it was a little clunky. You could tell maybe Trey Baxter was a little nervous or whatever. But I like the match. I like the promo that they gave for him to state who he is and his purpose and things of the sort. And I think this open challenge is working for Kushida. I also like that Kyle O'Reilly came out there and challenged him. He didn't challenge for the title. He just challenged out for a match. Because I've been stating that I think it's time for Kyle O'Reilly, especially you done got pinned three times in major championship matches as a face, and I felt like his face run wasn't as successful as they wanted it to be, because I think their character will work better as a heel. I'm hoping that this is the start of the turn where he goes here on Kushida, and this could probably elevate both people and make Kushida look more, even more serious and as a star, and make Kyle O'Reilly a star as in being a top heel. Then maybe down the line go back babyface. What do you guys think and about everything I said plus that segment?
All right. So, yeah, let's Kyle O'Reilly. That's a big question. I'll throw to these guys for that mostly. Kushida and Trey Baxter. It was fun. I think these guys can do better together. They're both trained by they both worked in New Japan. Kushida was young lion there. Trey Baxter was working there of late. This is the second guy that they've raided from NJPW Strong. I wish they were doing more with the other one, Tyler Rust, who I love, but they're not. And I don't know. I almost want to hear there's an injury, because that would be better to handle, because he's just so good. But yes, Trey Baxter, this is the former Blake Christian, the recently former Blake Christian, who did work a number of weeks on New Japan Strong, mostly in their bigger tag matches, but I thought that he was pretty good, and I had real, real trouble not typing Blake Christian tonight during the match, and hopefully I didn't leave any of those in. Kushida wins in 10:24 after a match where Baxter had most of the offense, but indeed, the hoverboard lock can come out of anywhere. I like the hook of Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole both getting their own chosen opponent for next week. And the obvious play is that they both win, but the possible play is the other guy costing them their match, or both guys costing both guys their match. But this does seem like a way to give a loss to Kushida in a non-title match. So, yeah, Kyle, I think, is just a big question right now, because this, I think, really is something that I always thought would really, really work, but it just seems messy and imperfect, and some of that is just the fact that the audience just wants to cheer Adam Cole so, so, so badly. Again, not sure if they need to pull the trigger on a double turn or anything, but I think that Kyle is suffering mostly because of that, Tom.
Who did they announce that Cole is wrestling next week?
They didn't.
Oh, okay. I didn't think so. I guess I missed what you were talking about there. But yeah,
he is wrestling next week, but it was just shown that he is wrestling next week.
Ah, gotcha. I did miss that. Okay.
Adam Cole in action.
All right. That must have been during I know exactly what part of the show that was during, and I consciously checked out. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. All right. Understood. I do agree with Darrell that I like, even though it's a weird spin on calling it an open challenge, and I thought about it, I was like, this isn't really an open challenge, but I think the way they're doing it, you still want to call it that. But it's still, like it did with Carmelo, the way that they're framing it still provides a good way to introduce these newcomers. I'm not sure if it worked out so well for Trey Baxter. I don't know him at all. This is the first time I've seen him, and he just came off as a filler dude. Like it was noticeable that he was on offense the majority of the time, like you mentioned, Kelly. But nothing that he did stood out to me or seemed crisp. And maybe that's just because we just saw Carmelo and he looked a lot better. But this just seemed like another, like when they carded out Kurt Stallion, and I was just like, yeah, okay, maybe a little bit better than Kurt Stallion, but I just feel like this is next week I won't remember anything about this guy. I won't remember what he looked like. Nothing stood out. I also agree with Darrell that I like seeing O'Reilly in this situation because he has lost. So, I mean, yeah, it was a five man, but he was the one that got choked out. He lost repeatedly to Balor quite definitively. He was the one who got choked out on Sunday. It's like, let's get this guy away from the top title for a little while. But it was really strange to do that immediately after, the match was booked for the Bash, between O'Reilly and Cole. Yeah, Vic Joseph, the second time that he said, what would Summer be without the Bash? Oh, gosh, if only we had, Summers since the Bash's inception to look back on, where we didn't have one to know what that could possibly be like, Vic. But that's the line. I guess it just leads me to the exact same thought that it seems like, okay, well, Cole's just going to get involved again. I guess mixed feelings because I feel like it's several ways, but just odd, an odd confluence. As for if I understood correctly, trying Kyle heel to eventually turn babyface again. The weird thing is just that like everybody already liked Kyle O'Reilly. You didn't have to change him. You didn't have to change. Like he was already cool Kyle doing the silly air guitaring down to the ring. And so you didn't have to change anything about him. You didn't have to change the hair. You didn't have to give him a jean jacket. And maybe these are things Kyle just really wanted to do himself, to be more himself out there. But I mean, you did not have to change the presentation. You just had to change the opponents. So part of me feels like if they turned him heel, they would go back to what he was in the Undisputed Era, which we all liked better. So that's, I don't know. I guess maybe it's a situation now of changing the opponents, but not the character because we don't like who cool Kyle has become. I don't know. I'm more concerned about Cole's casting because he's the one who has the higher ceiling.
Yes, indeed. Nate?
Yeah, I think that's as far as Kyle O'Reilly goes, I don't really think I have a whole heck of a lot more to add. I think you're right. Adam Cole is really the one that I really want to focus on. I really want to think about because he's the one that does have the higher ceiling there. And Kyle, like, I like Kyle. I really do. But I don't really like this current iteration of Kyle. Even the cool guy Kyle, like I kept seeing an Orange Cassidy ripoff, and I know that wasn't what he was going for, and I know it wasn't quite the same character, but that's just what I saw, and I couldn't really it didn't really resonate with me, didn't connect. The Undisputed Era Kyle is the Kyle that I like the most, I think. I wouldn't necessarily mind seeing him revert to heel if that was kind of the shades of the Undisputed Era Kyle that we got. I'd be okay with that, and clearly, you're going to turn somebody heel to then turn them face again down the line. As long as that heel turn goes well, then sure. I think that it'll make for a compelling, face turn down the line as long as it's booked correctly. as far as his match with Kushida and what was his name again?
Trey Baxter.
Right. Yes, Trey Baxter. I wasn't like overly super impressed by him. I mean, I enjoyed the match big time. It wasn't super crisp or anything. I completely agree. I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's got red hair pulled back, in a ponytail or whatever. But I just kept seeing like the dollar store Buddy Murphy, which is a weird thing to say because Buddy Murphy is almost like a dollar strike. Well, not really. He was really good. He just looked weird. But that's what I saw. It was kind of like dollar store Buddy Murphy. I don't mean that as a bad thing. I really don't. He kind of had the same look. He kind of wrestled similar, but not nearly as crisp or as good as Buddy Murphy. This is the first time I've seen him as well. So, I mean, I would defer to you, Kelly, on, whether or not he would, actually go anywhere in the company.
I've liked what I've seen just fine, but on New Japan Strong, he was usually stashed in like 6 and 8 man tag matches. So
okay.
He'd come in, provide a flurry, and he wouldn't have to be there more than like 2 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
So this is like, honestly, even though I've seen him in a lot of matches, this is by far the match in which I saw the most of him.
Okay. Fair enough. So yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to see, what he looks like the next time he's in a singles match that goes, more than 2 or 3 minutes. Because maybe it was nerves or something like that. Who knows? But not overly impressed by him, but I'd be willing to give him another shot. As far as Kushida in this spot, I love the open challenge. I think it's just a great babyface gimmick. So I want to see him keep it going. I hope he's got a long reign. I hope he has a long reign with that and he keeps this open challenge going for a little while.
I want him to be champion for 30 years. I will take nothing less. Let us go to our final caller.
Do you think Walter would still be UK champion in 30 years?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, is Walter going to lose the weight to take the championship from Kushida?
Show up at the open challenge. Kushida's just staring back at him like, I've made a huge mistake.
Although, would he? He'd be like a skeleton at that point with his size.
Oh, boy. Yes, we very briefly had another caller in there, and we have lost him, and I knew who it was and everything.
I'll take the blame. That one was my fault.
All right, so let's go to some emails. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. This is our very good friend JB from Detroit. He had a big question about the possibilities of Samoa Joe showing up, but then he did show up. So we will skip the first email. And he said, so I guess my question was partially answered. To what extent do you think Joe will get physical? Will we get a cross Joe match or will it be some more brawling spots? I know a dream match of mine would be Walter Joe at some point. Also, I think the opening segment tonight was an example of what people have been asking of NXT for months now. A moment of excitement and surprise to those who aren't privy to internet spoilers to break up the monotony. Here's hoping for more of those moments to come and that they aren't few and far between. Finally, I noticed a theme of flags and banners tonight. Imperium draped Fandango in their banner, and Legado del Fantasma's banner was hung in the background of Escobar's promo. I remember during the build to War Games last year, Tom had mentioned that McAfee and his stable should have done something with a UE banner to make a statement. If we see Hit Row's banner in the next week or two, might NXT be signaling that they're looking to do something big with stables in the near future? Don't forget we haven't seen a Diamond Mine vignette in the last few weeks either. We did see one tonight, and all it said was opening next week. It looks like a venue, but I just don't know. I don't know. I haven't been able to make sense of the Diamond Mine thing at all, other than it looks like an IcoPro commercial to you people of a certain age. That's all I can say. Banners being something would be fun. We do know that people in NXT listen to this show. So, Tom, I think they took your idea.
You know, I laughed when I saw the flag on behind Escobar, because, of course, the reason I mentioned that with the flag burning that McAfee did was that they've had these flags on the show for years now, 2 or 3 years, where just like it seems so silly to me that every time somebody's almost every time somebody's doing a backstage promo, they've got their flag up behind them. And I want to say there was a brief point where these flags were actually available on WWE Shop and they were like $50 a piece or something, but maybe I just dreamed that. I can't find any right now. I just quickly looked it up right this second. And I don't think they were even available when they first were starting to be shown on TV, if memory serves me. It just seems so silly to me that somebody, like, does the wrestler go and be like, oh, this is my spot, I'm going to hang up my flag right here? Or do they tell somebody from the staff, hey, make sure you hang up my flag over there? Or is there somebody that designates, oh, I'm going to put Escobar's flag there, so that's going to be his spot? It's so, so silly to me. So part of the reason I suggested that with the McAfee thing was because they've already established that these flags exist, so why not do something with them? If you know that you want to do, assuming that they planned out far enough to know that they wanted to do the flag burning, then take the next couple of weeks prior to it to establish something. Have Undisputed Era do like a flag raising, or I don't know, something like that. So yeah, these have been there for a while. I just laugh at them all the time. Yeah, I feel like Diamond Mine is the kind of thing that I should, you know, my role on the show for a while, like being Escobar's whole thing, right from like the first segment that they suggested that something was going to happen. I was like, oh, it's going to be this guy, and this is how it's going to happen, and that's exactly how it played out. I feel like Diamond Mine is something that I should know exactly what this is and have some brilliant idea. I've got no clue. It could be like the Raw Underground of NXT. It could be the very, very premature debut of Parker Boudreaux. It could be, it could be a troll job. There are so many things that it could be. I'm not sure if I'm excited about any of them, so we'll just have to see next week. I don't know.
Hey. Yeah, so I guess, let me get back to the email here. I just switched away from it. So as far as like the banners things go, like, yeah, I mean, I've noticed the banners as well, you know, over the years, whatever. I think it would be, I mean, in a way, I guess it would be kind of cool, like, to have, like, I don't know. The more I think about it, I guess it wouldn't be cool, really, to, like, you know, have some sort of banner wars, you know, or flags or something. I don't know how you'd really tie that in, but yeah, I don't know. The more I think about it, I don't like it.
For the record, I think it's a dumb idea. It's just like they're there. You've been using them. With the McAfee segment, you showed that you wanted to tie them into a storyline. Just come on. If they're going to be there and you're going to use them, then actually do something.
Do something with them. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, I did like what they did with the Tonight. I thought it was kind of just it was rude, you know, it was just a rude way of ending the promo or ending the match. So I like that because it fit Imperium's, you know, it kind of fits like their MO. I don't know really, you know, how else they would do, you know, anything with these banners. If they could come up with something compelling, like, sure, go for it. But otherwise, like, I don't know, maybe either leave them in the background or leave them be. As far as the Diamond Mine vignettes go, like, I'm not really sure what they are either. Like, I've done a little bit of looking at, you know, and looking it up and a couple, you know, read a couple things. And, you know, I mean, people are talking about it being that, they were talking about bringing in a second show that was going to be the, you know, undercard for NXT, like NXT
Evolve.
Yeah, NXT Evolve. I think that's what they were looking at calling it. So looking to be something like that. So I don't know. We'll obviously see where that falls next week. But I think that is the at least that's what's kicking around the rumor mill right now.
All right. We had one more email from Kevin Catani. Asked a bunch of questions that actually just completely cross over with stuff we've already talked about, but then also added, with a match already announced for Kyle O'Reilly, is this Kushida dust-up a one-and-done, or will he juggle two programs at once? Thanks, as always, go VIP. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. I think this is a one-and-done. I don't know why he would get into a program with Kushida. I love Kushida, but I think that their vision of where these two guys are is pretty different right now in terms of their height up the card. So I think that's probably what that is. We essentially talked Breezango and Imperium. I don't know if we need to cover that at all. 1024, a small package. Breezango wins, but Imperium does what they do with their flag. We have one other match. There were only four to talk about, that being the women, Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter versus Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. This went 12-24, and the pin scored by Dakota Kai when she hit the GTK. So Catanzaro and Carter, I just think, are a wonderful, wonderful underdog team. Believable that they could win in this spot for reasons of storyline, but also because they hit some impact stuff. It really, really seemed like they had a shot. I love the act, and I like that that they actually have a division just barely deep enough to have a team like this. I don't know where Kai and Raquel go from this. I almost thought that they were going to be cost the match by Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart, so they could transition them to this match and to have the champions coming up on facing Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. So we might as well put that segment together with this too. Io Shirai comes out, talks about, she's going to talk about who her next target is, but Candice LeRae decides it should be her. She and Indy kind of catch Io Shirai in a pincer attack, but Zoe Stark makes the save, and obviously we're going towards a tag match there. So seems like there's actually a decent amount going on in this division. Not a crazy amount, but more than we gave them credit for putting together. So on the women's tag stuff, Nate.
All right, so I guess I'll start with you know, Io Shirai, Zoe Stark, and the Way stuff. I'm kind of all for it right now. I'm all for it because, like, I like Zoe Stark, and I like we haven't really seen her a whole heck of a lot in recent weeks. If I'm not mistaken, one of the last times we saw her was one of the last times she was really in, like, a high-profile spot. Not the last time we saw her, one of the last times they were really focusing on her. She was facing Io Shirai in a non-title match, just kind of like a, you know, one-on-one thing. And then they tagged up for a little bit. So it's they teamed up for a little bit. So it's not like a weird thing to see them together again. I'm kind of completely fine with that. I think it's going to give, you know, Zoe a little bit more, a little bit of a rub as well. Maybe that's what they were waiting for. Was they waiting for Io to come back to bring her back, bring Zoe back? Not sure. Don't really know, but at least kind of what I'm thinking anyway is, you know, and with them facing the Way, I like this. I like the way that Candice came out and she, you know, called herself, you know, finally she's now a crowned NXT champion, and, you know, basically trying to rub it in Io's face that, you know, she had gold around her waist and Io doesn't. Really like that. I thought it was a great direction for them. And, you know, the attack from behind from Indy was, pretty double. I kind of saw that coming a mile away. But at the same time, it certainly made sense. I think it's a good direction for him. I don't know. You know, it's going to be obviously going to lead to a tag team match. I don't know if that's going to lead, you know, one or the other to be be like a number one contender or anything like that. I think they'd actually have to probably go up against Kai and Gonzalez, which I'll get into in a minute. But yeah, I thought this was a pretty decent match for these guys. As far as Kyan Gonzalez and Casey Carter and Casey Canzero, Caden Carter. I wrote Casey Carter in the hits and misses. Hey, I should probably fix that before I forget. Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro. This was it was a decent match as well here. I was really happy to see the two, Caden and Casey, back on TV. We haven't seen them for a while either. I think it was most likely due to Casey's injury. It's been a couple few months now that they've been gone. But it was nice to see them come back. They got a little bit more offense, a little more time in the ring than I thought they would. I kind of half expected this to be more of a squash match, partly because of, Casey and Caden's, past history being jobbers, but also this match involved the NXT Women's Champion. So I kind of, on paper anyway, I kind of thought that's where it was going to go. As the match progressed, I figured we were probably going to see Shotzi and Ember come out here and cost them title or cost them a match or something like that. But obviously no. The one thing that I kind of don't necessarily like is the fact that Raquel Gonzalez, being the women's champion, is going up. It's trying to go for the tag titles. This is something we keep seeing with women's champions. We've seen it with the NXT women's champion already a couple times now. We've seen it with the Raw women's champion, with the SmackDown women's champion. I don't know why this is something they keep going back to, trying to get women's champion to be a double champion. Whether Raquel's going to actually take the belt or not, I don't know. Take the tag team women's belt, I don't know. But the fact that, she's now kind of toiled up in this, not necessarily focusing on her title, I don't like that. If you want to book a champion to be a dual champion, the way I personally prefer it is almost like make it look like the champ, like your champion fell into this match somehow, or somebody else needed an opponent or somebody else needed a partner to go up against tag champions, and you as the champion, you said, okay, fine, I'll come down and help you out, and then you guys win and become tag champs. That's fine. But this whole trying to chase the tag team championship and get all the gold, in a way I can understand why it might be compelling, because you're like, okay, she's a go-getter, she wants to have every belt in the company that she possibly can, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah, I really wish she would be focusing more on her singles feud, or singles title. Unless this is all building up to the Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai eventual breakup that we know is coming at some point, but we don't know when. If this is all building to that, then I'd be fine with it. Otherwise, I kind of would rather see them get out of the tag team title picture, Kai and Gonzalez, so she can get back to focusing more on the title, her title.
It does not bother me when a champion wants more gold. I guess that doesn't bother me at all. But it is surprising how much it's been happening. And here, I just want it to happen because I want Dakota Kai to be a champion. Tom?
We have justly breezed past the last couple Tyler Breeze segments. But I do just want to mention, what is the former Prince Pretty, who lived up to his model gimmick, what is he doing with his hair? Every single time we see him, it's in a different, it's shaved a different way, styled a different way. It doesn't seem like this guy knows what to do with it. I asked my partner, who is very attracted to him, to the point where every time I went to a taping, she'd be like, hey, if he's there, make sure you text me pictures. I said, is he still a babe? And she looked and she said, it's funny you mention that, because I was just thinking, what happened? And, it's just sad, because he's just a guy now. I don't know why you give Breezango this win. At least that's what I thought until, they did the whole, trying to take it back by draping the flag over them. And I was like, all right, I guess, Walter's probably just going to get upset that they lost, and he'll decide to dissolve the Imperium and do his own thing. I don't know. So the women's tag belts. Every single time I see someone wearing one of the women's tag belts, I'm like, what the heck is that? Oh, right, those are a thing now. Oh, yeah. So Candace comes out with this thing on her waist, and I'm like, what in the world is she wearing? You know, the EO promo was the, you know, the same EO thing where they don't want her talking very long, so she always gets carried by Beth Phoenix or interrupted real quick or whatever. So that was expected. And just as I was typing the note, this really isn't anything, Zoe Stark comes in looking absolutely fantastic with that tank or whatever you call it on. Guns out. Oh, my goodness. I'm already very high on this woman's talent in the ring and what she's shown just this early in her run. And she comes out with those buys and tries in my face. Put this woman on TV more. It is utterly hilarious to me. And this bleeds over to the backstage Frankie Monet segment, which I think it's funny that she's saying everyone wants more Monet. That's a good line. That's a good line in 2021. I should be even more specific. It's absolutely hilarious to me that for a second takeover in a row, they had Zoe Stark wrestle before takeover, and they are now, after the fact, referring to her as having wrestled on takeover. I mean, granted, this was directed at Kamea and Aaliyah, but they wrestled, I had to look it up, that they wrestled Stark and Saray in a dark match that wasn't even aired. But, yeah, you know, we can just have them walk on screen and act like they wrestled a takeover match. It is – I laugh out loud when they do that. So then the actual women's tag match that we got, it led to the correct winners, of course. I agree that it felt like KC number one and KC number two – it seemed like they had a chance here. This felt like an earned elevation because they were being trusted to hang as long as they did. And they looked good doing it. As I say, every single time my talking point with these guys is that it's just been a really good, journey to watch and always track their progress because there actually is concrete progress. And this is the best we've seen either of them do yet. There were too many blatantly cooperative spots. A couple of things that Catanzaro, KC number one, has clearly learned from Ricochet, and I don't need them to be as blatantly cooperative as they are. But this is the new high watermark for those two, and it's promising to see.
Too many Casey's Tuesdays on ABC. It's good stuff. Audrey Marie, step in. Audrey Marie of old school NXT. If you're not following that with Tom and I, you can be forgiven for not knowing what the hell I'm talking about. But Audrey, step in and, get your man's hair fixed. Cause damn. Okay. So the last few segments on the show, something is charging. There's a battery charging. It started at 1%. It got to 11, it got to 20. So, It's a slow charger, and if my calculations are correct, it should be done within a few hours of the end of NXT. But I assume the next week we'll get to about 40%. But there's a battery charging, folks. That's all I know. Frankie Monet happens upon the Stone brand. Tom kind of talked about that. Mercedes Martinez got another talk segment and just was absolute dynamite. Just fire all the way through. I love it. Every time they do this, give me 30 seconds of Mercedes talking every single week for the rest of my life. Four matches this week. They were 10-24, 10-24, 12-24, and 17-09 for a total of 50 minutes and 21 seconds. We got one more email. This is from Al in NYC. Kelly, Tom, and Nate, you folks do a great job. While it's great not having NXT and AEW airing on the same night, moving to Tuesday nights has had an unforeseen downside for NXT. When NXT aired on Wednesday nights, it aired the night after Impact, a much lesser promotion in a similar size venue. On Tuesdays, it airs the night after a juggernaut with much larger wrestlers, and soon we'll be back at much larger venues. It ends up making NXT look small time. If NXT moved to Thursday nights, there would be have been much less contrast. Please give your thoughts in detail. It also airs the night after a show, which is dead miserable. So there's that. I this stuff doesn't stand out to me, but I know it does a fan of a certain type. Like, I don't watch wrestling and think about the relative size of guys at all, like at all, ever. So I don't know that I can really comment on this because I don't care and I don't notice unless somebody is absolutely superlative in size, like Omos. But that's it. And that doesn't make them look like bigger stars to me by any means. It just makes it look like stunt casting. I am not concerned much about this looking small time in comparison, but it continues to surprise me that NXT does not tour. Tom?
Yeah, and something I mentioned recently was that as much as I've argued for NXT touring for their TV in the past, they're at a point now where I have a hard time seeing them selling an impressive venue the way they would for their live event tours. Like I think that those are the kind of houses that they should be aiming for. And maybe I'm wrong. I do think there's also an appeal, an appeal to what NXT is supposed, you know, maybe they aren't really this show anymore, but they are still trying to be seen as the collegiate show. So being in a smaller house in front of a relatively smaller audience, I think lends to it a bit and makes it feel a bit more of a secret is too strong a term to use for it anymore, but a bit more of something that you've discovered and that you're cool for watching. Whereas Raw is just like, everybody knows what Monday Night Raw is. You're not cool if you watch Raw, or at least you're not cool because of watching Raw. You may be very, very cool and also watch Raw. But yeah, I very much appreciate the compliments, Al, but honestly, I don't view the day of the week that it runs on compared to what show preceded it and what show came after and everything as being a big deal. I don't look at the bigger show of Monday night and then go on to Tuesday night and think NXT looks lesser just because of having had a grander show on the night before. So that's not something that really stands out to me. But as for the other segments, I think the only other thought that I have is that the Mercedes thing seems to tip off. You know, Sunday night I was suggesting, you know, as I said, Nate and Keith talked about how, okay, now Mei Ying is going to start getting involved. And yes, that seems like it's probably the direction yes, that's probably the logical direction it will go. But what I would prefer is that now that we've seen Mei Ying get out of the chair and you know, choke throw Mercedes into the chain link, now I want her to sit back in that chair for a while, because now it's more ominous when she's sitting there, because we've seen a little bit of what we're supposed to believe she's capable of. So I want them to draw that out more, but Mercedes addressing her seems to tip off that indeed they're doing the typical NXT thing and moving quicker, more quickly than, and this again, people who have only listened recently, this goes back a long way with NXT. When they've got a good thing going, they usually only do it for like 2 weeks and then move to the next part of the story. I want them to dwell and let things fester and marinate, and this is something that could benefit from that. But it does seem like we are moving more quickly.
Nate, on that stuff.
All right, so I basically pretty much parrot everything that Tom just said about Mei Ying and Mercedes Martinez and all of that. That's pretty much where I'm feeling about it at this point. At this point this week, as far as the email here, I'm also in agreement with you guys. I don't think the night of the week makes a huge difference in terms of it being compared and contrasted to other, you know, to its competition. I feel like it would be a bigger deal going head to head, and that would be a bigger deal. You know, if NXT was going head to head with, you know, it was going head to head with, you know, AEW for a while or something like that, I think that makes more of a difference than NXT preceding Monday Night Raw and having it look like it's a smaller show. Because I think I mean, like Tom said, it's supposed to be that collegiate show. I think that's even how they still want it to be presented. So I'm okay with it. And that's really part of the reason I've always been drawn to NXT is because of the smaller venue. It does make it feel more intimate. I know exactly what Tom was saying. It's like not your secret. It's not a secret thing, but yeah, it does. It was the cool thing to watch for a while. And I still think NXT is one of the better products out there. We've been a little bit down on the product in recent. Recently. But I mean, in terms of, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW, I still find myself, enjoying NXT the most, maybe SmackDown here and there with some of the stuff they've been doing recently. But, I don't think the day, like if NXT was all of a sudden on Thursdays, I don't think people would see it as a bigger show simply because it's so far after Monday Night Raw, because then obviously you still got people thinking about SmackDown the next day too. So, yeah, I hear where you're coming from, Al, but I respectfully disagree.
Short version, Al, there might be too much wrestling. I'm Kelly Wills. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. Email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Call us at 515-605-9345. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Stauff, and go VIP so you can listen to NXT 8 years back with me and Kelly on Saturdays. And, of course, we also talk movies on that podcast. This coming week, we will be comparing of The Rock and Batista as well as discussing our favorite Pixar movies.
I didn't know either of those things because I haven't read the email yet. Now I know what to think about for the next 12 or so hours. Nate, who are you?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I will have posted up on site for you guys in the morning. And I also do this. I don't really have anything else to plug, so I'm just going to plug I'm going to bed.
And with that, we will see you in 7. Cheers.